Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, my finest of friends. It's me, Richard Herring, and this is Can I Have My Ball Back? It's a podcast series all about gonads, grapes, and ghoulies. There's hardly anything about grapes, but we had to alliterate, and my producer feels that testicles resemble grapes. If your testicles resemble grapes, probably see a doctor, especially if they're red grapes. In part, it's about one of my own giggleberries. And its epic journey from my scrotum in my trousers to a container in a mysterious hospital lab, a bit like the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones, waiting to be opened. But it's also a celebration of sweetbreads in general. This is episode 9. It's difficult to come up with euphemisms by episode 9, but this is episode 9. And there's a bumper interview with comedian and fellow meat and one veg owner, Simon Munnery, to look forward to. There are a few comedians who have gone down to one, and Simon was a pioneer in this regard. Of course, we have more of your brilliant emails on all things nuts. But first, we need to wrap up my own story, and that's because this episode will mark the end of my junk journey, at least for now. Hopefully there's not going to be a second chapter. Last time round, I met my oncologist for the very first time and agreed to undergo a course, and a very short course, of chemotherapy. Now, that momentous day had arrived. The day of my chemotherapy arrived. I was up early to get to the cancer centre, and I ended up being the first person in the queue when the chemo ward opened its doors. I was shown into the waiting room and given some forms to fill in. A nurse came over to weigh me and measure my height. She told me I was 177 centimetres tall. That sounded wrong to me. I was pretty sure I was about 168 centimetres, but I wasn't totally sure because, like most British people, I've resisted switching from imperial measurements for, and only for, height and car speed. A decision vindicated by Brexit. Thank you very much. It's all been worth it. Well done. All I knew was that I was an impressive 5'7" tall, if you're rounding up, from just under 5'6.5". But I wasn't going to disagree with a medical professional. She knew what she was doing. She must have measured thousands of people. She only had to take my height off a vertical ruler. How likely was she to be like 9 centimetres out? I must have misremembered my own metric height. I went and sat down in the waiting room, and sitting there, I was wondering why they weighed you and measured you. What if it was how they decided how much chemo drugs to give you
And what if I was given the dose of a man who was over 3 inches taller than me? I mean, that might make me explode. There was a part of my brain telling me not to complain. This extra height would seriously improve my BMI. According to this ridiculous system, I was currently obese. But if I was 9 centimetres tall... If I was 9 centimetres taller... Okay. Then I'd merely be overweight. That was something I'd dreamed about. I'd now achieved it, not by months of dieting and exercise, but by simply standing still and possibly being measured incorrectly. That's a win. I eventually realised I wasn't actually prepared to die for the sake of vanity, and I went back to the nurse to query her measurement. She was still adamant I was 1 metre 77. She said my height might seem different because I was wearing shoes, but I don't think my trainers were giving me a 9 centimetre boost. I searched 1 metre 77 in feet and inches on my phone, and Google informed me that it was around 5'10". Now, unless my right bollock had been really dragging me down all those years, I was definitely not that tall. I insisted to the nurse she'd made a mistake. She insisted she hadn't, but in order to shut me up, she measured me again, and as if by magic, I'd shrunk back to my normal tiny size. For 3 minutes, I'd lived the exhilarating life of a man who wouldn't automatically be discounted by 75% of women on a dating app. Why hadn't I gone on a dating app in those 3 minutes? Fantastic. It wasn't the most reassuring thing to happen before undergoing a scary procedure like chemotherapy. I mean, what if they got those measurements wrong as well? I got taken through to my chair in the chemo ward. On one side of me was a happy tattooed man in a leather jacket. He had headphones on, was bouncing his head to the music. He seemed to know the staff. He was very relaxed about the treatment. He was clearly a pro. He was wearing his COVID mask, but only over his mouth, which is a bit like wearing a condom on the bottom half of your penis. But I let it go. Wasn't the time to exercise that particular bugbear. I didn't want to get into a fight in a chemo ward. Plus, we'd all pass COVID and temperature tests to enter the building. So, yeah, let the guy breathe a bit. He's having a tough time. I was understandably jittery, but the staff were full of cheer and banter and inappropriate jokes, which is precisely what was required. My nurse looked at my arm hungrily, claiming she wanted to find a fresh bone. I had so little clue about what chemo actually was, I wasn't sure if she was completely joking. As it turned out, chemo goes into your veins, but they had trouble finding one of mine. The first nurse gave up without even trying, and a second nurse had two goes. It was like pinning a tail on a donkey. On his second attempt, he said, "I don't really like having to do this before going in via the back of my hand." I don't know why that was worse than the arm, but in any case, it didn't work. Was I going to discover that although I was cancer-free, I had the more serious condition of having no blood? Was this my body at fault, or did no one at this place know what they were doing? I started to wonder if this was a real chemo department, or if it seemed suspiciously like Alan Sugar had instructed his apprentices to set up a hospital service and they were fronting it out like they knew how to use measuring devices and needles. It might be a bit extreme for them to treat real chemo patients, but, you know, think of the ratings. Nurse two called for a third member of staff, at which the first nurse chirruped, "If we're calling for her, this must be serious." Luckily, the senior members of staff was used to people with uncooperative veins and slapped at my skin until she found something that she could work with deeper in my arm. At last, she successfully pinned the tail on my donkey, although without a blindfold, so I'm not that impressed. These three attempts would be the only uncomfortable part of the whole procedure, and very mildly at that, everything else passed without incident. For the first 10 minutes, they put saline solution into your bloodstream. I don't know why. I guess it's if you die, the salt will make your meat a bit tastier. Then the chemo drugs went in for like maybe 35 minutes, and then they flush out your system again at the end. Actually, the longest bit was waiting around for a bag of drugs at the end. But, you know, I probably shouldn't have called my drug dealer at this particular time. It was inappropriate. After the procedure was over, I had to wait ages for them to get my meds from the pharmacy, but finally someone gave me a bag of drugs. I had some pills to counter nausea, which might or might not be a side effect, and some injections to shoot into my stomach over the next few days to help with my white blood cell count. The chemo had no immediate side effects. I felt exactly the same as before, which was annoying, as I'd hoped it would give me superpowers. I dreamed I would inherit all the abilities of the needle that had bitten me or the bag that dripped the chemo into me, but apart from a very full bladder, there was nothing. If pissing like a horse was my superpower, then I'd been badly served. Partly because I was more than capable of doing that already. You have to wipe up your wee, because it's like alien blood. It goes through the floor if it hits the floor. For a bit. I bid goodbye to the team and said I hoped I'd never see them again. And they agreed that they didn't want to see me again either. It was the nicest possible thing we could say to each other. So, like, I had a sort of weird reaction to... It was fine for a bit, and then I sort of got very tired and felt a bit nauseous. It was a bank holiday, and my family all went off for a barbecue, and I was left at home. I felt a bit better the next day, and I had the first of the three injections to boost my white blood cell count. Katie willingly volunteered to spike me. I guess she had a lot of frustrations to work through. I was glad she did, though. It was a slightly complicated procedure involving grabbing a bit of stomach fat and popping the needle in at the right angle, and I would definitely have ballsed it up. Or balled it up. Around this time, I got a letter from Dr. Sharma, which documented all the stuff we talked about before the chemo. He also gave me some more info about my ball tumour. Now, I knew it had been pretty big. All the professionals had remarked upon it. But before now, I hadn't had any idea of the actual dimensions. The letter explained that the tumour measured an impressive and still slightly unbelievable 6 centimetres by 4.4 centimetres by 2 centimetres. I'd known it was long, but I was surprised to learn it was almost as broad as it was tall. It's bigger than my actual testicle. It was like my testicle was a TARDIS. Sending my sperm back into the past. I was probably my own granddad. That's probably what's happening. If it's hard enough to picture exactly how big that was, I nicked some of my son Ernie's Play-Doh and crafted a model to those dimensions. I don't know if Ian Play-Doh, the inventor of Play-Doh, ever envisioned it being used for this purpose, but I recommend you take the time to do so as you listen to this podcast. You can use whatever malleable substance you have to hand. 6 centimetres by 4.4 centimetres by 2 centimetres. Have you done it? We're not carrying on until you've done it. All of you, I want you all to have my ball in your hand. All right, it's pretty big. You would think I'd have noticed a lump like that hitching a ride in my Nadja papoose, and I suppose in the end I did. It's amazing to me that there was still a question in my mind, even when I first went to see the GP, that anything was really wrong. Who would have guessed that my right bollock puppet was so near to being to scale? The more I thought about the dimensions of my unwelcome intruder, the more I started wondering about the person whose job it is to measure cancerous knackers. You know, how do they know the exact dimensions of it? It's not the glamour job of the hospital, is it? Is it something that people want to do? Or do they, you know, if you've done a sloppy job in surgery, right, you're measuring the balls now. I just hope they wipe the ruler afterwards. Whoever it was who completed that task, it struck me they were probably the last person to ever handle my ball. They got its size, noted it down, then chucked it in the bin. What an ignoble end for the godlike Genesis machine that I'd had in my scrotum. It was handled by so many, but from memory at least, only the last one actually measured it.
And that was the last installment of my thrilling stand-up story of going from two testicles to one testicle. Coming up soon, my thrilling story of going from one testicle, maybe to three testicles. That would be a surprise. Comedy's all about surprise. Or maybe down to zero. If anything changes, it's probably going to be in the negative. But, you know, the remaining testicle may self-reproduce like one of those lizards that in difficult times becomes asexual. That's what I'm guessing. If you have enjoyed this podcast, even if you haven't enjoyed it, why don't you check out my fantastic book, Can I Have My Ball Back? Which goes into the story in much more detail, has even more facts about testicles, and is available from all good bookshops in paperback now. And in some bad bookshops as well. Not yet in discount bookshops, though. So, you know, you have to decide. Am I going to wait to see if I can get it for £1.50 in the works? Or are you going to go now and buy it? You know, it's like being a trader in the city, isn't it? You have to decide. Anyway, look, my next guest is someone I have known for a long, long time. Many years, since I was a child, in fact. He had testicular cancer way before I did. He was a pioneer of testicular cancer in the comedy world. So I was really interested to compare experiences and talk about this and all sorts of things. He's an absolute genius comedian. And he met me in his home. And when I say his home, he met me in his nice, in his shed. It was a nice shed. But I'm going to tell you, he did not let me in the house. So I don't know what that says about me. Let's find out who this mysterious comedy genius with one testicle could be. Okay, I'm here with comedian and artist, poet, Simon Munnery.
Shed builder.
Shed builder. Thank I've you. Seen a shed.
You've seen the evidence.
I've seen it.
Yes.
In his lovely home in Bedfordshire. Are we in Bedfordshire?
We're in Bedfordshire.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. And Simon, you've had testicular cancer, as have I.
I have had testicular cancer.
You had it first? I thought if Simon...
I was first.
If Simon's done it...
just following the trend.
I'll have a go.
I imagine we'll end up on TikTok, shaking our bollock.
It was a little while ago, wasn't it?
I'm not really bad at that sort of thing. It must be 20 years ago.
Yeah. Before you had any kids, right?
So, yes. Yeah, that's so what that, spurred so me on. Yeah, I thought, well, come yeah, on. I used to joke about it. I used to say, next thing, wife pregnant. Turned out I didn't need the other one. It was holding me back.
So how did you discover this, and did you act immediately? Or
how I discovered that I had testicular cancer, I was at my in-law's farm in Dorrigo, New South Wales, right up on the plateau. I was helping doing cattle work.
Wow.
My specific job that day, it was to hold the leg of the male calf while it's put into a race, I think, or a trap. It's called a race or trap. Anyway, it's a metal thing that clamps the cow.
Wow.
Not cow, it's not a cow, it's a bull. At this point.
Okay.
And it still stays a bull. It doesn't change gender. They're not fluid. Cows, cattle. Anyway, they flip it over on its side. And the bloke, whose name was Robert Pitkin, he's dead now, RIP, but he was a ex-copper from New South Wales, hard as nails. Hard as very, very hard nails that have been hardened for a long time. All right, mate? And I would hold the leg. He'd chop the testicle off, throw it over his shoulder to his dog. And every so often, he'd take a little break and he'd go, Simon, shall we do you now? And it was hilarious the first four or five times. Anyway, that evening I go in. Dorrigo's in the middle of nowhere, so it's miles even from Dorrigo, the farm was.
Yeah.
It was about an hour's drive till you get to the tiny village and then another 2 hours till you get to a town. Anyway, I've got a little bulge in my groin area. Not the normal one. I've managed to identify the causes of that. No, I had a bulge in my groin area, and so I showed my mother-in-law, who's the nearest source of medical knowledge. I just, what do you think that is? I had no idea, but you better get you to a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, hours drive down to the doctor in Dorrigo. He has a look. He says, nah, you've got to go to Coffs Harbour. You don't get that scanned. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Down there, I get an ultrasound scan. He's rubbing it slowly, and it's a hernia.
Right.
It turned out. But while he was doing it, he also scanned my testicles. And he called another bloke with a beard. And that's when I knew it was serious. And he goes, you've got cancer. I go, what? You've got testicular cancer.
Wow.
Yeah, we just carried on. We were on holiday, I think. And flying back, my wife, Janet, thought, because I've got a diagnosis of testicular cancer, that meant I could possibly be bumped up from economy to business. But it didn't work like that. They took us off the flight for quite a while. But we got back on it because a woman who worked behind the counter's husband had had testicular cancer.
Okay.
And she got us back on the flight.
Okay.
In economy. But it's a
why
little
did
tip.
They took you off? Because you were saying, were you asking for an upgrade or just because they didn't want
no, to? No, not because you're asking for an upgrade. Because you're ill.
Because you're ill.
You don't want ill people on planes.
Okay, right.
Right. But I wasn't ill.
No, you...
Yeah. I was in no sense ill.
No.
At no point along any of this process was I ill.
No.
Anyway, so then I go back and I'm in the system. Yeah, you got testicular cancer, got scanned again.
Was it surgery immediately after that? Was that the was only it, option?
Yeah. Yes. And I remember that night, I remember going into the, I was going to say hotel, but in fact hotel and hospital were from the same route.
Yes.
I went to the hotel hospital. But I was totally well. I'd never felt weller.
Yeah.
And, firstly, they give you a form. You have to sign off for the possible consequences, illness, infection, death. You just sign that away.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to go under anaesthetic. I wasn't worried about the cancer so much as being cut up with a knife.
Yeah.
Under anaesthetic, since people do die from that. And I'd signed off against it. And the atmosphere in that ward, like, so it's either people who have just had the operation and they come back in their white gown with a distinctive red splash down it, groggy, and, you know, oh, well, at least he's still alive or whatever. But so it's those people, and then there's the pre-people who are... There was one group of them just all night just talking manically to each other down the end. And I read King Lear. I can't remember a word of it, but I read the whole thing.
Wow.
And at some point, I thought, I'm just sick of sitting in this bloody ward waiting for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going out to the pub. And I put a coat on over me and went down to the pub. I thought, I could die. Maybe I should ring someone and say goodbye. So I rang a couple of them, but they weren't in. And they came to me, like, leaving a message. And I was like, oh, well. Bang, woke up. It was done. And next thing, wife pregnant. But then once you're in the system...
Yeah.
Then I had a CAT scan every 6 months.
Yes.
A cat, rub it slowly over your body. If it meows, you're ill. CAT scan. I did a once. I mean, I can't remember it. This is probably fragments of it will crop up. I did a whole show about it.
Right.
At the time. which was all right. It was quite a good show. I had to sit down because I was on chemo then.
Yeah.
Except for Brighton. Have you ever thought of a thing just before you go on that is hilarious and turns out not to be?
Of course.
It's like, it's that thing you think of just before. This show I'll be going on, sitting down, the opening line was, good evening, I've got cancer.
Yeah.
Right. Fine. And the rest of it is a sort of true story about how it happened and thoughts about that. Anyway, it's about 45, 50 minutes long. In Brighton, I remember, backstage there was one of those... I had to sit down. I could not stand up for the whole hour. Yeah. I could walk. I'd just get really tired. Anyway... they've got one of those spinny office chairs with wheels. I thought, do you know what? I've never gone on stage on a spinny chair. Wouldn't that just be the most amazing fun thing to do? And so I went on the spinny chair, spinning round, stopped, went, good evening, I've got cancer. And this bloke goes, bollocks. And I go, yes, I'll be coming to it. But they, as a group, as a whole crowd, did not believe me.
Right.
And if you don't believe that opening line, the central narrative of this is a slightly true story, it's a bloke making up a slightly lame story about having cancer when he clearly doesn't. Look at him spinning around on his chair. Yeah, so there's that. All right, so my continuing cancer story goes on. So then I'm getting scanned every 6 months, CAT scan, and eventually they found an abnormality.
Right.
And I had what it's called, I think it was like a year later, 2 years later, relapse seminoma. Some cells in my gut somewhere, a CAT scan had revealed them to be cancerous. So it's a comparison between one CAT scan and another CAT scan.
Right.
But anyway, once you're on the railroads of industrial medicine, I've just coined that phrase, but anyway, once you're on the railroads, it works out very well from the department's point of view if they have an early intervention. They're always very keen on early interventions because you may have got better anyway. It's like you go to the doctor and they go, well, come back in a month. Oh, you're well. Or, you know, surgeons take the credit, but it's the body that heals itself. That is the miraculous thing, that you can cut someone up and it bloody heals.
Yeah.
It's not some magic of their sword, I don't think. Anyway, you've got cancer again. But it's great, we've got it early. This time you need chemotherapy. And what are my options? Have nothing, then, you know, it's a chance you'll die. I can't remember what the chance was. But the best two options, I remember, were 99% successful chemo, the traditional one, or the new experimental 98% successful carboplatin chemotherapy. But the plus side is you keep your hair. Okay, but I'm not ill. Yeah, you are. You know, you've got cancer, right? What do you do? And I was like, and I went for the hair option. I regret it now. So that's what I had. I'd go in every month or so, be in that ward where they give you the drip for an hour, and it's just poison. Yeah. The aim is it's going to poison the cancer more than the cancer. You're talking to some bloke, having a fag out on the smoking balcony of the chemo ward, talking to this bloke, and he's going, yeah, the first time they do you, it lasts 7 years. The second time, 3.5, they don't do you a third.
Right.
So that's the third. Okay, this is sort of inside knowledge of how it works. And anyway, they did it. I took the chemo, got weaker every week. I was in Edinburgh and I did a show about it in Edinburgh. I did three shows that year. I did a trilogy. Top that, really.
I can't with cancer.
Otherwise, mental. Cancer. I was in complete denial. I didn't feel ill, wasn't ill. Even though I was on chemo, came down for my last chemo shot, flew down from Edinburgh.
Right.
And I was staying at Kevin's.
Yeah,
and I'm just staying here the night, getting the first flight back in the morning. And he's got a film shoot at 5 or something. He says, whatever you do, son, please don't wake me. Anyway, I've got my dressing gown on, as I remember, you know, just reasonable summer's night. But anyway, I just opened his front door on the balcony to have a fag.
Yeah.
And there was a gust of wind and the door slammed shut. And I'm going, oh, don't wake him. It's about 11:30, you know, not late, but he'd gone to bed already. Don't wake him. Right, oh, there's a windows open up there. Maybe I could try the drain pipes. No. Oh, right. All I need is just someone to leave the tar buckets around the corner.
Yeah.
So I went round hers. I was still in the dressing room. She wasn't in. And I came back and I thought, oh, well, I'll just sleep on the step.
Yeah.
So I did that for a bit, and that may be why I lost the use of my arm.
Oh, God.
But anyway, I did that for as long as I could, but it was really freezing. It must have been about 4 a.m. I woke him up. It was the worst of all worlds. I should have woken him up just straight away at 11 o'clock. You know. Anyway, so I had tried to sleep on my arm, the one that then got nerve damage. And then back in Edinburgh, a night later, two nights later, I'm holding eldest daughter, who's about one and a half, you know, still a baby, really. And wife and friend are out seeing shows, and I'm just holding them. Oh, then my arm starts aching and aching and aching, and really, like, ow. They come back. I go, yeah, the baby. I went across the pub. It's about 1:30, but it was still open. Double brandy, nothing. I mean, it didn't help. Right. I just like, fuck. And then I jumped in a cab, went to the hospital, queued up some paracetamol. Thanks. Didn't really cut it. Anyway, I'm just in agony all night, more and more pain, just can't get rid of this pain. It's like the whole thing was in spasm and clenched. I had history of it. I'd had a frozen shoulder before from sleeping on a stone floor, I think. But anyway, I'd regained it, and it was all hadn't happened for years. But there must have been an inherent weakness on the left side.
Yeah.
And I slept on this stone floor. Anyway, more agony. Go back to the hospital the next morning, and eventually someone gives me morphine, and I hadn't slept for 24 hours, and I was at last able to sleep, right. And the pain had gone. But by then it was too late. The nerve damage had been done. Right. And then I was with the neurology department at a famous London hospital for a while, and they don't know much, I'd say. I mean, they do, it's classic. They do the thing with the hammer, you know, the knee.
Yeah.
And they bang you to see, that's the level of. And they had an electrical test.
Yeah.
I had it twice. First, they told me it's in your neck, and the second time, it's in your shoulder, where the fault was. Right. But everyone's map of nerves is completely unique, like a tree. You might look in a biology textbook, and there's a map of nerves. Mm. Well, that's a map. Everyone's is completely different.
Okay.
There's no point having a neurology department, that's all I'm saying, from what I... Anyway, so I go, come back in 6 months. So I went back in 6 months, and it's come back in 6 months, come back in six... You know, it might get better on its own. Is there anything I can do? Any diet? Should I eat bananas? What should I... and then after 3 6 months, I was just discharged.
Right.
And that's it. Lost partial use of his hand.
Yeah.
Partial use, you know, I can still... say punch with it. I can hold things like that. I can hold yeah. stuff, but not anything else. No, I can't play the guitar, but I couldn't before I started, so no change there. But I got 10 minutes out of it, it's all right.
Well, as a comedian, there was a big part of me when I'd first gone in to the doctor.
Was it your testicle?
Yeah, well, it was. But he told me it probably wasn't anything. And I was happy, but I was also slightly disappointed that I wouldn't get a show out of it. And then it turned out it was something. So, but you know, there is, as a comedian, all these things. You know,
it's all grist to the mill.
They don't kill us. Yeah. Then it's okay.
Not kill us might get a laugh.
You know, and I've told other comedians about it. You know, you can see they're almost like, ah, oh, lucky bastard. You know, he get an hour out of that. Well, it looks like it's worked out well for me losing this ball. I've got a book out of it. It's now in paperback, you may know. I've got a thread in my Radio 4 sitcom Relativity about it. I've got this podcast series. I've got a fantastic ventriloquist act. Involving right bollock. I'm the right bollock. Get back in the scrotum. I don't want to go back in the scrotum. And here's some big news for you. I am touring the stand-up show Can I Have My Ball Back from April to July, at least in 2024, which will be travelling around the UK. I would love to see you there. Head to richardherring.com for details. That will be uploaded as soon as we have all of the gigs confirmed. But I'm very excited about that. Right Bollock's going to be in it, so you can meet him after the show. Get his autograph. You probably don't want his autograph because the stuff he signs with, it's not ink. That's all I'm going to say. We have some adverts for you now, you lucky people, but we will be back in a minute for more chat from the remarkable Simon Munnery and his shed.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to Can I Have My Ball Back? And we're carrying on with the interview with comedian and fellow monoballer, Simon Munnery. Together, our balls make the balls of one man. But we are two men, like some kind of two-headed monster from medieval times. I asked Simon if he knew what had caused his testicular cancer.
When I was 11, I had a testicle brought down from Birmingham. I don't know why exactly. Like, was it my idea or was it cosmetic thing or what it was exactly? Like, I had a testicle that descended.
Yeah. Okay.
I had an operation. I remember it being very awkward the last years of primary school. But that is a major cause of testicular cancer later, 30s later. I don't remember anyone saying, by the way, this is going to give you cancer later.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of sceptical about any kind of surgery.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay away from doctors as long as
I can. It's strange they didn't tell you. And I think if that happens, they should be looking at you every couple of years just to check everything's okay.
I think it'd be nice to have mentioned it.
Just mentioned it.
But if they knew that at the time, they may not have known that at the
time. Well, it's interesting how little, you know, talking to Bob Champion, it was interesting how 40 years ago how chemotherapy was in its infancy and people didn't even know testicular cancer was a thing, really. You know?
Hardly even fashionable.
No. But then I found no one said until after I'd had everything taken off and got the diagnosis, because they didn't diagnose...
They took it off and then they said,
we think, we don't know what it is, but we have to take it off. But then once they told me it was cancer, they said, oh, but it's 99% survivable. But I spent like 6 weeks basically thinking, I've got cancer.
Yeah.
Therefore...
Just that phrase.
Yeah, therefore I am dead, basically.
Well, there's some study they did in Australia of mastectomies.
Right.
And a large proportion are completely unnecessary. But what it is, we've got quite advanced scanning techniques, mammograms, and they'll find some abnormal cells. But a large proportion of these will turn out to be benign.
Yeah.
Will go back down. But as soon as you say to someone, you've got cancer, the alarm bells start ringing and you're on a medical route to whatever. There's a tendency to intervene.
Yes.
On the other hand, there's the placebo effect and other effects like that. The fact you believe in it helps. So, and if you didn't, and to some extent I don't. So the classic example, when I'm having a blood test, to me, in a way, it's a woman coming at me with a very tiny knife. I don't look. I've never punched a nurse. If you really did not believe in Western medicine, the sheer terror might kill you.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, I think with science, it's understanding that you're making a progression, and with medicine, you're making a progression and hopefully moving forwards to something. But
yes, hopefully.
Hopefully. But, you know, testicular cancer now, you know, 40 years ago, the survival rates were 40%, and now they're 95, 99%, something like that. And it's interesting. I think when you're going through it, it's great to have the example of people who have had it 20 years ago and are still here. So that's a very comforting thought. Yeah. I can't imagine there was for you, and there wasn't for me, really. Was there any fear of losing masculinity and losing a testicle, or did that cross your mind?
I didn't think that to myself, but I suppose in the back of my mind, it was something like that. What effect does that have? Like, you know, I didn't like it. Voluntarily... did I fear losing masculinity? Not then.
No.
But now, yeah. I really do. Well, no, I've got evidence.
Yeah.
So I go back to the hospital for a blood test, various markers. I mean, they used to get me off on the table and give me a little squeeze.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened for a long time. You know, you live in hope. No. They take my blood pressure as well. Yeah. Normally after the blood test, and I'm needle phobic. I had to just recite the Lord's Prayer and look away. And sometimes it takes them 3 or 4 goes to get it in. It's not something I look forward to. Anyway, after they've put me through flight or fight syndrome, they then take my blood pressure and find it's really high.
Right.
I'll tell you why that is. It's the order in which you do these things. So I did have high blood pressure, and they do all these blood tests. Anyway, I was out in the garden, and as the phone rings, mobile. Yeah, get me. it's a woman's voice. She said, do you know you've got a low testosterone count? I went, hello, cheeky. I took it as flirtation. You've got a low testosterone. See about that. Anyway, not critically low, but high blood. Anyway, what's the effects of that? Various ones. It's bad for your bones. You'll get arthritis, osteoporosis, some sort of things like that. Bad for your heart. There was a list of things, and she gave me some symptoms, one of which was uncontrollable weeping. Right. Or do you weep? I went, no, I don't weep. And afterwards, I said, do I weep? And then I was asking my daughter, yeah, you do. You weep all the time. So I suppose I do. But, you know, it just crept up on me. I just do a lot of weeping.
Yeah.
That's what I've become. Anyway, so then they offered me this testosterone gel, which you rub on your chest to replace it. And I said, I'll give it a go. I'm on for any kind of drug, really, just, you know, the ones I haven't tried. Can I have some? Well, actually, you've got a low platelet count, high blood pressure. So that's receded. They've several times teased me with the... Not teased me. Yeah. Well, you probably need some testosterone gel.
Yeah.
I might just get some online
and
try
it.
So I've got a low testosterone. That is, you know, I think an effect probably of the...
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Lost use of the arm. But that's, you say, like, you're losing your masculinity. I mean, well, like, I can still, my penis, I can still ejaculate.
Yes, good.
I don't know if I can impregnate.
No.
I haven't attempted that.
In a while.
Well, I don't want to have any more children.
No.
Three's
a
just
lot.
Fine. And I've got a dog.
Yeah.
you know, that's surely enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as I know, that's all working fine. But maybe I've got a lower libido, and witnesses, my daughter, say you do weep easily.
You weep?
I do weep.
So maybe. I mean, it's interesting.
I just want to try it.
Yeah.
Give me some. Slap it on.
Well, you should definitely get that. You know, I think it's a psychological thing as much as anything. And because it's seen as being the seat of manliness, and it is to the extent that the testicles produce sperm and testosterone and help you get erections.
Do they?
Yeah, I think there's something in there.
Springs.
I don't know. Might be springs. It's more like, well, a lot of men aren't happy to talk about this subject. You know, that's why a lot of men don't go to hospital, because they leave it for too long.
I think they've got a point.
Yeah.
As in, you go there, you get your diagnosis. I don't know. There's something about a diagnosis as well. Just once someone tells you something, you've got that. It's kind of a relief, but also then the psychological effects of that might contribute to whatever's happening to you.
Sure.
You know, if I could tell you, say I told you you're autistic, you might start behaving in a more autistic fashion.
Possibly, yes.
And
I think there's some truth to that. But I don't know, it's you know, I wasn't a particularly masculine male before.
It's not what the others say.
This happened. It hasn't changed my feeling of who I am or anything like that. And I think some men might think, oh, if you're somehow less of a man as a result of that, or you're meant to grow balls and have more balls than you've got to be really
the way
masculine.
Balls is used, you know, man up, show some balls, or that kind of thing. Oh,
but, you know,
I'm old enough not to care.
No, yeah. I think I'm old enough not to care as well, but it's the weakest part of your body. It's overcompensating, isn't it? Because it's not in a macho, strong part of your body.
You don't use your testicles for fighting. No, it's your weak spot, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of it's, you know, a lot, it fucks with your mind. I find I've just become very paranoid about my other testicle, which isn't that surprising.
Bit of cage rem.
Yeah, well, I just worry that something...
Because you know, your nut squirrels come.
I think, like, losing one, you know, there's two for a reason. The reason is that if you lose one, you've still got another one.
I really don't think... Do you think there's a grand designer?
I think there isn't a grand designer. I think that's just why it's come out that way, because if you lose one, then you will have a better chance of procreating. So it's just mathematics.
Well, the 1+1 equals 2.
Yeah, 1+1.
Branch
well, 2 is better value.
It's good value, certainly. Good,
than 1. If you do catch one of the brambles, you've got another one to go.
Got 2 arms. Why not 3? Where are the things with 3
but
arms?
But sometimes nature experiments. So there are polyorchid people with 3 or 4 testicles.
Are there?
More. Yeah, not many. But
that's a podcast.
That happens.
They're the people you've got to track down. See what they're doing.
It's very rare, but there are more. So, you know, I think
polyorchids.
Yeah, polyorchids. orchids, yeah. And mono orchid is what you and I are.
Now?
Yeah.
No, but I'd imagine a mono orchid would be someone who's born like that.
Well, I think you become, you know, you can have it thrust upon you.
I prefer semi-eunuch.
Semi-eunuch is good, yeah. Demi-eunuch.
Demi is more like a demigod, isn't it? I am a demi-eunuch. Fight ye not me.
There's an argument that it's made, and I don't think this is true, that Tesco's evolved to be weak to impress potential mates. By how you're prepared to, yeah, you know, the more vulnerable you are and yet you survive it, the more impressive you are. Something like that.
Evolution leads to, you know, there's this theory that it's what happened. Why has the giraffe got its long neck? When I was at school in biology textbooks, why the giraffe got its long neck, the previous view was the Lamarckian view that successive generations stretch their necks further to eat. But that was one, because one generation stretches its neck, it doesn't mean the next generation will be born with stretched necks.
No.
It's got to be the evolutionary argument, which was, there was a terrible drought, and all the shorter-necked horse-type creatures died out, but the ones that could reach the leaves,
yeah.
And then that happened again, and again, and again. All these terrible droughts that killed all the shorter... It's nonsense! That's complete nonsense. Giraffes don't very much eat from... they use their necks for show and fighting,
yeah.
To impress ladies. And basically, you come down to the mystery of what impresses ladies. The peacock. Oh, yes, well, it's what it is, it's because it shows so much extra energy you've got to build. Yeah. It's all just, like, in retrospect, you can explain it that way. It's kind of, evolution's kind of framework. Oh, it's survival of the fittest, therefore it must be fittest. And then we've got to find out why, and we can invent this story. But you predict me something. You tell me something that's going to happen next. And as far as I know, no one's done that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, well, that's very interesting.
Didn't have to be funny.
It doesn't have to be funny, but...
anyway.
Did having cancer change your perspective on life or your approach to life? You had kids. Would that have happened anyway, or would...
I think it was a spur on, just to see if it still worked.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I wouldn't have had a family so quickly.
Yeah.
if it hadn't been for that. So that's, in a way, it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever you have children, you'll think, God, I wish I'd done that younger.
I
had the strength.
I certainly wish that. So you had a couple of your kids after the chemo as well then, presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's super strong. That's super why they're strong. So odd. This one has super strength. Another one is incredibly timid. But together, you know, they're all normal. Fingers crossed, you don't know. Do you?
I know. What is normal?
Mm.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Richard.
For your time.
For your time. Thank you.
Having us in your shed.
See you on the road. I'll be having you in my shed. You're very welcome.
What a interesting and thoughtful man Simon Munnery is. He's a brilliant comedian. Do check him out if you get the chance. And he is a little bit more suspicious about the medical industry than perhaps I am, but it's still very fascinating to hear all of those thoughts. And now, for the final time, for a while at least, let's have another rummage in my bulging ball bag mailbag. You've been emailing us at cihmbb@gmail.com. That's the initialism of canihavemyballback@gmail.com. It's been a real highlight of the series for me to hear from you. Please do keep sending the stories in. We might be back with more episodes in the future. I think we probably will be, but I don't know when. As always, I would say it's very good to talk about this subject. So even if you don't email me, do talk to your friends about your experiences. I think it's helpful for everyone. Our first email of this episode is an absolute corker. It comes from Colin, who says, I grew up in Scotland. Oh, hold on, I have to read this in a different... I grew up in Scotland and moved to California for work. My producer Ben's telling me I have to do it in my own voice. I grew up in Scotland and moved to California for work. Whilst there, I got into the habit of not drinking enough water and became dehydrated. I didn't really realise this was happening, but my main symptom was that over a few weeks, I developed a very tender bollock. It ached constantly, and as I walked, every step caused a jarring that was like being flicked in the testicle by a malevolent time-travelling finger. Even worse, my man glutes started to solidify. And I found little cubes of white jelly in my spunk when cleaning up after a wank. Sorry, Colin, I'm not laughing at you. All experiences are valid.
I was eventually diagnosed with a congested prostate. Who knew? My doctor told me that the solution was for him to manipulate my prostate to break down the solidifying area. So, there I was, pants around my ankles, the doctor behind me with two fingers up my ass. He then proceeded to press hard on my secret walnut. The pressure roared into my bollock like a lightning strike. I screamed the only way a Scotsman knows how to scream, by shouting, "Fuck me!" This resulted in a nurse bursting into the room to find me bent over, trousers down, with tears in my eyes, and the doctor still knuckles deep in my ass. Paying my bill to the same nurse at reception was probably the longest few minutes of my entire life. Oh, God. After the lightning strike, the doctor had actually asked me to try to milk out whatever I could so that he could get it analysed. I couldn't even try. I just stood absolutely still, cradling my cock and balls with tears running down my face. Thankfully, this was a one-off procedure. I'm not sure I'd have gone back for another. Instead, I began drinking lots of water every day and eventually shot out the final few blobs of jelly, and the symptoms never came back. Love from Colin. My producer has just put on the notes, respond. I mean, you would think after all the years of genital research and genital jokes that I've done, I would have heard absolutely everything. But jelly in the sperm and being milked by your doctor. Colin, I'm going to have to let your beautiful words speak for themselves. Thank you for sharing that. And drink some water. I mean, drink water, everyone. That's the message there. Keep hydrated. How dehydrated do you have to be to get jelly in your sperm? Whew. Now, this next email from Alan needs to come with a bit of a trigger warning. I can't really give details because that would need to come with their own trigger warning. But suffice to say, if you're squeamish, perhaps skip ahead
3 minutes.
I've asked my producer Ben to put in the exact time once he's finished the edit, so hopefully he did that or I'm going to look stupid. Also, bear in mind, there was no trigger warning for Colin's story, so I have a feeling this story might be quite a lot, is what I'm going to say. I haven't read it yet. Let's go in together. Alan says, in June 2021, I said farewell to my old mate, Righty. The operation went fairly well, but the surgeon had trouble with the removal due to previous operations, undescended testes and a vasectomy. So I was black, blue, purple and swollen. Think a cricket ball-sized scrotum, which is a little bit bloody and sore. I got sent home with meds and was told to rest up. I went back to the consultant twice in the next couple of weeks as my scrotum was heavy and still very colourful. Both times he said it was just fluid, which would be absorbed back into my body. Great stuff, I thought. But I found out a few weeks later that he was literally talking bollocks. At the end of July, I went on holiday to Cornwall for a much-needed getaway with my wonderfully supportive wife. Things were going great until we had a bite to eat on the beach. During the picnic, I noticed a stain on my shorts. Thinking I'd spilt some food, I went to brush it off. If you're squeamish, stop listening. It wasn't food, it was blood. My swollen, colourful ballsack couldn't take the fluid pressure anymore and had popped. It wasn't painful, but it was bloody messy. I went to A&E, where fortunately the urology consultant was on duty and he saw me the same day. They operated to drain and clean my nutsack and pack it with fabric ribbons. Afterwards, the swelling had gone and I felt so much better. They sent me on my way with instructions to remove the packing after a day or two, then to see my GP when I got home. I'm presuming the ribbons were outside of the scrotum, roughly. Nope. It sounds. No? Okay. You remember the magic trick where the magician pulls a... You remember the magic trick where the magician pulls a string of flags out from up their sleeves? My wife had the job of pulling on the ribbon they'd left sticking out of my scrotum and removing about 6 feet of odd-coloured ribbon. If that's not love, I don't know what is. I think that does beat my wife applying unguent to my jockstrap sores. I mean, you could have done it yourself as well. That's what I love. So it's nice that you got an assistant involved. I hope she had a feather boa on. Glad to say, after the holiday, things went pretty much back to normal. I had a tough time trying to get my testosterone levels sorted, but after many letters and phone calls, I got put on testosterone injections and started feeling like my old self again. I'm still having surveillance scans and blood tests every few months, but touch wood, all is going well so far. Best wishes, Alan. Again, thanks for the honesty with these stories. It's absolutely incredible. The good humour as well within these sort of awful situations. But it is good to see the funny in it. It's good to talk about it. And again, two emails, two things that I've never considered in my life. pulling ribbons out of your scrotum. What an education. We've got to do more of these. We can just read the emails out for the next episodes. And finally, for now at least, I received an anonymous email titled Embarrassing Bodies. It says, I recently had testicular pain. I had a bit of mild discomfort. I blamed this on taking up cycling, but one night it was undeniable that something had changed. I think I would have been reluctant to say anything, but thanks to your openness, I was able to straightforwardly tell, in turn, my partner, the doctor's receptionist, and the doctor. He was reassuring. The absence of swelling or lumps meant this was unlikely to be cancer, but I had a scan which confirmed it was varicocele. It's sad to think how many men have literally died of embarrassment in the past, but I suppose we need to make sure we don't take it too far and offer viewings to the bus queue. Yeah, I mean, don't show your testicles to anyone who has not consented to see them. Even if they're a medical professional, say, is it okay to show you something? They will say yes, of course. But yeah, thank you, Anonymous. It's always brilliant to hear that me talking about this has made other people happy to talk about it, has made other people happy to go to the doctors. Please do go to the doctors if you have anything. Varicocele is very treatable, nothing to worry about. And most of the things that will feel like a problem will turn out to be something pretty harmless and treatable. But if you leave these things, they can lead to complications. So the sooner you get there, the better your chances of getting through all of this with as little hassle as possible. And that is that for now, at least. Thank you so much for all those emails and messages. It's really made a huge difference to this series. Please recommend it to other people. The podcast is here for free. You can buy the book if you want to and send that to all your friends. It's the ideal Christmas gift, I would say. If you want to find some testicles in your sack, what better time than Christmas? Can I have my ball back? Out in paperback now. Available everywhere! Yeah, look, I've really enjoyed doing this and I hope we will do some more. But if not, or until then, please keep checking your junk. Whatever junk that may be, doesn't have to be testicles, any vulnerable parts. If anything changes, go and see your doctor if you have the slightest worry that anything might be wrong. They honestly won't mind. That was Can I Have My Ball Back, presented by me, Richard Herring. Thanks so much to my guest, Simon Munnery, and to all the guests this series. I'm, of course, indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thanks also to Chris Evans, not that one. Oh, that one, he's not that one. And his son, Ben Evans. Thank you also, of course, to my researcher, Alex Hiscock. George Lingford did a wonderful job recording the sound, despite his incompetence as a sound man. I'd also like to thank Rich Evans at Syncbox. Also, thank you to the Bill Murray and the Phoenix, where I recorded the stand-up. Two brilliant venues. Do check them out. The music, by Gustav Holst, is named after Jupiter, which, if you think about it, is the most swollen ball in our solar system, not counting the sun, which, you know, if your ball's on fire that much, probably don't bother going to see a doctor. Thanks also to BMG Music Library. This is a Go Faster Stripe, Sky Potato and Fuzz production.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. gofasterstripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.